Aladdin Theater in Portland. Oxymoxwa is a 1969 album by the Grateful Dead. Fans and critics alike consider this era to be the band's experimental apex. The Garcia Birthday Band is a group of veteran musicians interpreting and celebrating the repertoire of the late Jerry Garcia and the Grateful Dead. Again, that's the 50th anniversary of Oxymoxwa with the Garcia Birthday Band on Friday, June 14th at 8 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater, 3017 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of I'm Afraid of Americans, a book release party on Saturday, June 8th from 6 to 7 p.m. at Books Around the Corner in Gresham. The stories of I'm Afraid of Americans are set in a high school in Los Angeles County in the 1980s. They show students, teachers, and support staff busy with daily details, but also living in the history, geography, and dislocations of their time. Author M.F. McCullough will read from the collection of stories and sign books. Again, that's I'm Afraid of Americans, a book release party on Saturday, June 8th from 6 to 7 p.m. at Books Around the Corner, 40 Northwest 2nd Street in Gresham. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Coming up next, it's the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. The president is closer than you might think to placing himself above the law, and Abe and Joe will take your calls. At 9 on Alternative Radio, they feature Chuck Collins, director of the program on inequality and the common good at the Institute for Policy Studies. And at 10 on Flashpoints, it's a rebroadcast of Dennis Bernstein's Memorial Day show. At 11, it's Peace, Love, and Soup. And now it's time for the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
Hey, hey, good morning. It's a lovely day out. It's almost like nice. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe Proctor and me, Joe Uris. Number to call, 231-8187. I just don't know where to begin. Things are so weird, and I can't help but address them. The President of the United States gave the most incoherent toast before the royals in England. It was just terrible. And, of course, the royals don't let him stay in the palace because, hey, you know, the palace is being repaired. So, you know, there may be 50-odd bedrooms, but there's no room for the Trumps. Well, I just think things are going really swimmingly bad. Did you know that there is now a plan which is being enacted that 25% more forests are being cut every year than on federal land than was previously the case? And what does that mean? That means that there's going to be a crisis of climate anyway, and it's going to be all the worse because guess what? Trees make clean air. And trees are pretty, and trees are part of the climate environment. So all that's going wrong. The Iranian president and Donald Trump met together. He probably didn't know it was Iranian president. He wasn't adequately introduced. And he stood there looking confused while Trump went after, and this is really amazing, Trump went after our ally in the Middle East, Qatar, which everyone's now pronouncing Qatar. I don't know why. Anyway, Qatar. Now, a little bit about Qatar. Qatar is one of those small states which are oil-rich and which are surrounded by other oil states which are supporters of the Saudi government. But Qatar is the outlier, And so, and this is about the politics of the region, it's not about U.S. loyalty and so on. Qatar, just so you will understand, is our largest base for aircraft and ships in the Middle East. It's a crucial part of our so-called defense system. And Trump has gone after it. Why? Why is he trying to? Well, it turns out that his boys, guys like Broden and Nader, and that's not Ralph, it's another guy, N-A-D-E-R, are paying, buying, selling the deal for the Trump administration. And one of the most amazing of those figures is Nader. He is very tight with, the Trump administration, and he just got busted yet again, I want to repeat this, yet again, for kiddie porn.
Morning.
Kitty porn.
I picked the wrong time to walk into this
conference. I think so. And, you know, it's just amazing. The degree, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but the degree of sleaze and disgustingness and horror that is represented by the Trump administration. Did you see Kushner?
Kushner, yeah.
What a sleazeball.
Yeah.
God, what is going? How long can rational Americans, or even irrational Americans, continue to support Donald Trump?
Well, you know, that's one question. Sure, I think a more serious question is that even going to matter? Is the president going to put himself in a position where he's not accountable? Totally. I think it's entirely possible.
Yeah, are you thinking like unconstitutional taking over of government, kind of?
Yeah, in a matter of speaking, or simply a situation where he there will be no effective mechanism for him to be
gotten rid of.
Or to face any consequences for his law breaking, not to mention his dissolution of our traditional institutions.
Well, I can imagine. I can imagine him discovering that he's really dictator for life, but sooner or later. He isn't, and sooner or later there's going to be a lot of revenge.
Well, what shape is that revenge going to take? And this here, let me just kind of walk you through what I'm talking
about.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Okay,
go ahead.
So we know that the president was colluding with a hostile foreign power during the 2016 election.
You mean like Russia?
Russia, to influence the outcome of said election,
yes,
correct?
Yes, that's been proven.
We do. And wrapped up in that is a whole bunch of other stuff. The lure that was being dangled in front of Trump was this $300 million deal that would have erected a Trump Tower building in Moscow. So that was the prize that was being held up. That's what Putin was offering him.
Mm-hmm.
There's also been quite a bit of speculation, some of it founded, some of it not, that Putin had also had some sort of dirt on Trump that he was threatening to reveal.
Silly dirt.
Yeah, but all this is to say,
yes,
that we know that this was going on. We know because there was a years-long investigation into it headed by Robert Mueller.
Oh, Mueller.
Right, Robert Mueller, exactly. Yes. And out of that investigation came literally dozens of indictments, convictions, and a number of people are even serving jail time for their behavior during the campaign in relation to collusion with Russia. Okay, so we know all this. Mueller released his report a couple of months ago. We still have yet to see the whole thing. We know that the Attorney General, William Barr, who auditioned for his job by drafting a memo explaining why the president was essentially above the law and could not be indicted, released, and everybody out there is nodding along, yes, because you've heard all this, released a four-page summation of the Mueller report, concluding and announcing that the president had been exonerated and that there had been insufficient evidence to convict him of obstruction of justice.
Uh-huh. Which, of course, is not what Mueller said.
That's not at all what Mueller said. So when we went on, we got to look at a redacted version of the report, which contained a whole lot of information that contradicted what William Barr delivered in his summation and indicated that, yes, in fact, Trump and his campaign had, in all likelihood, and Mueller lays out eight cases in particular where it is all... It's clear that the president obstructed justice. And the report referred these cases to Congress and also referred a number of ongoing criminal issues to other branches of law enforcement. So the report did not exonerate the president. The report indicated that there's much, much more here, some of it criminal and some of it now in the sphere of influence of the House of Representatives. Mm-hmm. So Mueller last week came before cameras and said essentially what he had said in writing. He said, if we had means or if we had a reason to suggest that the president had been exonerated from committing a crime, we would have said so. I'm paraphrasing. He's like, if he was off the hook, we would have said he's off the hook. We did not. He explicitly reiterated the fact that this is now Congress's ball, and they need to pick it up and run with it.
Congress run with the ball.
Congress run with the ball. Okay, so I want to put a pin in this part of the conversation right now.
Okay.
Mueller has said, impeach this guy, or at least begin the process.
Right.
All right. Now, the other side of this, and what I think is more frightening in terms from the perspective of those of us who are interested in preserving our institutions, because the alternatives are just too horrible to contemplate, and I'll get to more of that in a moment as well, is that the president has also empowered the attorney general, given him carte blanche to declassify any information that the attorney general deems pertinent to the 2016 campaign. In the following respect, you've heard Trump allege that there was deep state conspiracy to spy on his campaign. You've heard this, right?
They spied
on my campaign.
Yeah, well.
Well, that's not true. What's true is that the FBI was investigating his campaign because he was colluding with a hostile foreign power to try and game the election. We just went over all of that. That's what Trump is calling spying on his campaign. So let's take a step back and think about the implications of this. The attorney general is the highest ranking law enforcement agent in the land. He oversees the Department of Justice. It is his responsibility as part of the executive branch to execute the laws of the land, particularly matters that are criminal in nature.
Yeah,
right. That's what the attorney general does.
Like he has the FBI on his his team.
Yeah, he's the boss.
Yeah,
you know, he's also got the entire federal judicial apparatus, the U.S. attorney's offices all over the country, who prosecute federal crimes, who prosecute crimes on behalf of the federal government. Right. Mm-hmm. All of these things. The president has said to this guy, "I want you to go after my political enemies with all the power of the Justice Department." That includes investigative power, the power to declassify previously classified information.
Speaking of putting a pin on it, declassify secret stuff.
Declassify secret stuff. Now, there's a whole conversation to be had about what is secret and why and should it be. We could spend weeks on that topic alone. But the president has empowered the attorney general to do this. So that he has all those powers, investigative, he can issue subpoenas, he can declassify previously secret information, and presumably could go on to issue indictments. To whom? I'm not quite sure. Presumably to members of his own department.
Well, I have a question right here. What does that do to the secret arrangements we have with allies like Great Britain and France and so on?
That's a very good question. If I were a member of the British government or the French government or the Japanese government, I would be looking at what's going on here and saying, we may very well be dealing soon with a guy who has no accountability under his own system, who is able to operate at will to do what he wants with no regard for traditional institutions, norms, even the law itself. And they may wonder whether that's a wise course of action to continue dealing with that person. Now, probably economic concerns will override these questions of prudence and sanity, but I guarantee you these questions are being asked in the highest circles of government amongst our closest allies. Let's take the example of Mexico, one of our closest allies, our third largest trading partner. In fact, an economic partner that is so integrated with what we do that any serious disruption to the Mexican economy is going to produce an equivalent disruption to the American economy. So much of what we consume as dwellers in the apex of the global capitalist pyramid is assembled in Mexico, is grown in Mexico, is manufactured in Mexico.
My avocados.
Some of those come from California, but yes, your avocados. So Trump just recently announced the imposition of tariffs on Mexico that will continue to escalate until Mexico is able to throttle down the number of people crossing the border without documentation to zero. So he's saying, build a virtual wall, Mexico, keep people from coming over the border, or else we're going to exact economic punishment on your entire economy. That's what he's doing. And right now, there is nothing to stop him doing it. There is no mechanism in the government to hold him accountable. These things exist, but somebody isn't sitting in the chair. Somebody's hand is not on the lever. And when I say this, I'm looking at the Democratic Congress. So we have a president who right now, at this moment in time, for all intents and purposes, is able to act with impunity on virtually every front. There's nothing he's doing now that anybody is taking any action to check. That should make you alarmed.
Well, there's talk.
As an American.
There's talk.
Yeah, there's talk. Yeah, most definitely there's talk. But we have arrived at a moment in time where the absurdity is almost too much to bear. And we hear, we look at the Democrats in Congress. We hear some of them talking about impeachment. We hear the Speaker of the House saying, no, I don't know. But really the question that underlines all of this is, the President of the United States has committed multiple impeachable offenses. We can name them and we can document them. And there exists enough evidence right now to justify the commencement of impeachment proceedings. So the question is, if the president is commits impeachable offenses and is not impeached, what does that mean for the preservation of what remains of Republican government, that small R Republican government in the United States? What does it mean if the president is not punished for his crimes? I'll answer that question for you. It means that any future occupant of that office will not be constrained by anything that might have held Donald Trump back.
Well, I agree with you, but I think part of the problem is a strategic one. The Republicans control the Senate. You can impeach in the House with a Democratic majority, which might happen, could, it probably will happen, but it won't go anywhere because the Republicans control the Senate.
Yes, but see, what people don't, impeachment and removal from office are two different things.
Absolutely.
The president can be impeached and still keep his office. That happened to Bill Clinton. That happened to Andrew Johnson.
Yeah.
In fact, we've never had a case in American history where a sitting president has been removed after a trial in the Senate.
Right.
It's never happened. So a lot of people on the left-ish side of things are saying, well, that's reason enough not to go forward with impeachment. The Speaker of a House of the House is among them. I think this is a big, big mistake. Again, because there's nothing to hold the president accountable. He is essentially above the law. We need, for the sake of history, for the sake of posterity, for the what remains of the integrity of our governing institutions, to hold this man to account for his actions. Literally, the future of the republic depends on it.
Well, I agree with you. I also think I was when you were dashing in here,
mm-hmm.
I started to talk about, kind of without real preparation, talking about this guy Nader, who turns out to be a kiddie porn guy.
Kiddie porn guy.
Close to the president.
Very close to the president. A frequent visitor during the early months of Trump's administration,
right,
to the White House.
And Broyden and others who are
mm-hmm.
criminals,
mm-hmm.
many of them facing or already have been indicted. And this is, look, shorthand, the Trump administration is a gang of criminals. Trump himself has spent most of his life in the courts because he, too, is used to being and acting in and cooperating with criminals.
Yes. And I think it's safe to say that he himself, his entire life, perhaps since the time he was a child, has never had to face the consequences of his actions in any meaningful way.
Well, and it's a crime family. His father
has
violated lots of law in building public housing and not allowing persons of color, for example, to live in those buildings.
Yeah.
So it's all nasty.
It is all nasty, yeah.
Is it all smelly?
Right.
It is all nasty? It is all creepy?
I'm glad you mentioned the racial aspect of this, too, because in addition to all the lawbreaking that's going on, in addition to committing treason against his country, he's also a dyed-in-the-wool racist. There's example after example after example of all of this. This is the guy who separated literally thousands of children from their families at the border. People are dying every day as a result of unsanitary conditions, from exposure to cold, from malnutrition, from inadequate medical care, and on and on and on. There was just this week, a trans woman from El Salvador died in ICE custody because she was denied the medical acute medical care that she needed. This is what's happening under this president every single day. You recall the riots in Charlottesville in the early part of his presidency.
There were good people on both sides.
There were good people on both sides. I'm glad you mentioned that, too, because what is 2 days from now? What is the date 2 days from now?
Charlottesville anniversary? No.
No. It's June 6th. It's the 75th anniversary of the D-Day landings.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right.
The president is in Europe. He will undoubtedly take part in some observance of that anniversary.
Stumblingly, badly.
Right, but I wonder, is he going to observe that there were good people on both sides of that conflict?
Well, sure, yeah.
This is just astonishing.
Nice Nazis, you know.
So, yeah, am I voicing moral and moral outrage in addition to what I think is righteous criminal outrage? Yes, yes, I am. I think it's cripplingly embarrassing to have a Nazi-friendly president of the United States. And I shudder to think what he's going to say in 2 days on the anniversary of the D-Day invasion.
I agree with you.
Okay.
I think we should give some people a chance to call us, talk to us.
Okay. There's more. I'll share more.
Well,
after
no,
we
go.
Take
go
some calls. Let's go to the first call.
Let's go to the first call. Chris, good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
Hey, guys. I think you're getting a little bit alarmist on this Trump taking over stuff. I mean, are you serious? I mean, you really think the military would back him up or what?
I think the military will obey the law. And the law will. The law will.
Problem.
But let me finish.
So what do you keep talking about? This Trump.
The law is interpreted by the Attorney General. The military is handicapped in all of this, because they will undoubtedly obey the law. Look at the fact that, for example, they hid from Trump's eyes a ship with the name of somebody Trump doesn't like. It is not reasonable to expect the military to save us. That's a paradox that we can't bear.
Well, there's the what can he get through Congress? Exactly nothing, because the Democrats have the House, right? So I mean, he can deal with the trade issue, I personally, but they could eventually put restraints on that, I suppose. But I think what they're doing on the trade issue is they're just letting him hang himself, because those tariffs are going to come back and hit his own voters, you know.
Well, you look, in the meanwhile, our economy, our farmers, our workers, our corporations even, can be really and permanently harmed. All you have to do is look at the period after World War I and before World War II to see how all of this played out that led directly to the rise of fascism in Europe and eventually led, obviously, to World War II. You make these mistakes, they're not just policy errors, they're real people problems.
Sure, I mean, but same with Bush. He killed people, right? He killed millions of people and thousands of American soldiers.
So you're saying, I'm not quite following your argument. Did it all be all right or what?
No, it wasn't all right under Reagan. It wasn't all right under Bush. But it doesn't mean he's going to take over the government in some kind of Hitlerian fascist thing. He'd have to have the military to back him up to do that. He's not a dictator. A lot of his stuff is tied up in the courts. He's under 50% popularity. You really think a military would back up someone like that? There's courts. I mean, you know, he's getting his stuff overruled all the time in courts. And I mean, he's still damaging things just like Bush and Reagan did.
Let me say this. Bush, absolutely, Bush the stupider, absolutely lied. With Cheney running the game, created a false narrative that led us into an endless war in the Middle East with lots and lots of people being killed for no purpose whatsoever. All that's true, and you mentioned it, and that was bad. But at no point did all of the elements of a dictatorship make an appearance. This is the first time in my memory, and remember, I'm a little bit familiar with American history, no time in the past have we ever had essentially a president of the United States who is both stupid and crazy. And this guy is stupid and crazy, and I'll add in a third element, ignorant, incredibly ignorant. And you say, well, no, see, there'll be all these institutional checks and balances. The fact of the matter is that those checks and balances only work in a system where there is respect for those checks and balances. And Trump has no respect for anything except his own small head thinking.
I don't know. I think you're overblowing it. Bush was stupid and crazy. He couldn't, Dick Cheney couldn't get him to read a memo unless he put a Bible quote on it. Do you know that?
Yeah, I remember hearing something about that.
Yeah.
Well, listen.
He said to Jacques Chirac in a meeting, we have to worry about Gog and Magog. And Gog and Chirac.
Are you talking about the Chirac biblical reference? Yeah.
In other words, he was a Christian maniac. And for 8 years, he had his finger on the button. So there's enough restraint. I mean, people, look, he just had a huge investigation of him.
There's not enough restraint, and I'm going to get into some more details as to why in a few minutes.
Yeah, I just don't see it. Dictatorship around the corner thing.
Okay. All right. Well, I may change your mind. Stay tuned. Thank you for the call. Okay. Now I want.
Yeah, you alarmist.
No, I'm not. I'm not an alarmist here. I think there's
It'll be okay. There's
a really troublesome case to be made here, but I want to make sure that I lay the context in an appropriate way. So let's take Mike's call.
Sure.
Okay, Mike. Good morning.
Yeah. Well, Rupert Murdoch sure got to that guy, didn't he?
Which guy? Oh, the last caller.
Yes, sir.
No conspiracy.
Power.
No conspiracy here.
Yeah.
I think the guy sincerely believes in the system, and he sincerely believes that the system can withstand the insanity of the current administration. That's all he's saying.
That's not the scary part. The scary part are millions and millions of Americans are sitting watching that stupid boob tube and buying it. This dumbed down stuff. You know, they're dumbing us down slowly but surely, and people aren't paying attention. They don't see what's happening. They don't get it. They're missing the point.
Well, there are people, obviously, who are still Trump supporters. There are people, obviously, who don't get it. But, you know, one of the things we all have to be very wary of is, and I fall into this often, is the sense of, oh, no, there's nothing we can do. I believe I believe there is a lot of intellectual credibility and actual just ordinary common sense among ordinary people. If you just tune in to any news anywhere and you see Trump stumbling through a simple salute to the British government at a dinner party and see that he can't hardly handle it, even if you are a strong supporter of Trump, you have to go, well, gee, I can't even read something that his people wrote for him.
Hillary's
famous non-existent emails.
And no, if you're not scared to death, and if you aren't shaking in your boots, and if you aren't looking at William Barr like he's the next Goebbels or something, you aren't paying attention, sir.
Yeah, that's my point entirely.
Okay, that's good. Look, I want to thank you for the comment, and I want to hear what you've got to say for yourself, Abe.
Okay, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Program on 94.7 KBOO.
At 231-8187.
Yep, 503-231-8187. Also, you know what you can do? You can write to the Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe. It's a good option, I think, right? Because it allows you to think about your thoughts, organize them ahead of time, write them down, review them, make sure they're coherent. Just like Trump does, yes. And see, here's the real benefit for writing us a comment, because I will read it simply so Joe will stop talking. So there's that.
Well, there's that.
I am putting that on the table for you.
I never thought of that.
Gentle listeners, yes.
So in other words, you can shut me up with somebody writing something.
Right. If you want Joe to shut up, write me something and I'll read it.
What about the people, those 12 people who like to hear me talk?
Well, then, you know, they're going to have to get with the times. That's just all
okay,
there is to it.
Okay, this is some kind of weird intergenerational feud.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, okay, so now
I'm not going to play with that.
Okay, so I want to give some context for what's going on today. And to do that, I want to go back, way back to the 20th century.
Oh, I remember the 20th
century. I do, too.
You
do? I came of age during the 20th
century. You were
just
a child.
I was. But I also remember December of 1998. Do you know what happened then?
No.
The impeachment of Bill Clinton.
Oh, right.
There's a few very pertinent.
It's because of the stained dress.
It was. Well, yes, ostensibly it was, but it was really because the Republicans see any Democratic occupant of the White House as fundamentally illegitimate. And they have for a long time. A long time before Bill Clinton came on the scene. So December of 1998, impeachment proceedings go forward in the House. I'm not going to go into the background of that case, but except to note that in December of 1998, it was a lame duck House of Representatives that initiated impeachment proceedings against Bill Clinton. That's how much the Republicans wanted to impeach him. And as you mentioned, really, it came down to impeaching him because he lied about a consensual relationship with a subordinate. Okay?
Okay.
You know, not exactly commendable behavior in an American president, you know, but certainly not.
Oh, but nothing like Trump.
Nothing. That's absolutely true. Nothing like Trump and nothing like Bush or Cheney. And this is, I'm going to point out why this is important in just a second. So we exist to a large degree under the shadow of the Clinton impeachment. The Clinton impeachment was an egregious misuse of constitutional power and prerogative. It was not used in the manner in which it was intended to be used.
And it wasn't an appropriately serious enough event.
No, not an appropriately serious enough event. Well, so what is the consequences of pulling the trigger on this really big gun when you didn't need to use it? Well, it means that when legitimate circumstances come along after, they will be questioned on the grounds of politics, because that the Clinton impeachment was a politically motivated exercise. So now, when let's fast forward a few years, Bush and Cheney are in office. They've lied the country into war. They have essentially dismantled the Fourth Amendment through the passage of the Patriot Act. They have adopted torture as an instrument of American foreign policy. They have done all these clearly criminal and impeachable things. Right?
Right.
Impeachment is not even considered to be on the table because of the previous president having been impeached over nothing. It waters down that constitutional mechanism, and it creates conditions under which any attempt to use it in the future will be questioned. That's what we're dealing with, and we're dealing with it now today. Why is Nancy Pelosi so afraid of instituting impeachment proceedings against the president? Because she had a front row seat to the Bill Clinton impeachment, and she saw the political price that the Republicans paid for it. She saw a sitting president get more popular as impeachment proceedings continued, and even more popular as the end of his term rolled around. She has read those tea leaves to say that it is a losing proposition politically for the party that introduces impeachment proceedings. So she's not going to do it. Likewise, during Bush and Cheney, if ever there was a situation that cried out for the impeachment of the president, it was those 8 years. And we're in the same situation today.
Well,
it is as clear as day.
No, I agree. Except I really believe, actually, that the crimes of this administration are so egregious that even the most conservative Republicans are going to turn around, and it's going to be within months going to be so obvious that this guy is a criminal surrounded by criminals that they're going to want to get rid of him themselves. The Republican Party faces demographic disaster as well. The voting population is more and more persons of color, more and more young people, mm-hmm. And more aware of the crimes of this administration.
But let me ask you this, Joe. How is it that these crimes are going to be made so obvious? What's the process?
You mean aside from the radio stations and the TV stations and the newspapers and the magazines and
uh-huh.
all that?
Yeah.
And online, all that?
Yes, all that.
I don't know, because people be really ignorant.
Let me rephrase my question. In official governmental channels, what is the process for making these crimes obvious to the public?
I'm not sure.
Okay, I'm sorry. Hearings in Congress, okay?
Yeah.
Hearings in Congress.
Hearings in Congress. All right. Okay.
Here's the problem we're facing, and here's why I'm arguing that the president is doing everything he can to place himself above the law. Last month, President Trump's attorneys went to federal court, and they argued that Congress has no right to look at his tax returns. Why? Because it has no right, no intrinsic right to look into matters having to do with law enforcement, because law enforcement is the purview of the executive branch.
Mm-hmm.
So right there, he's saying, his attorneys are saying, you can't investigate me because I am the president and my tax returns, for some reason, are a law enforcement issue. So you can't look. It doesn't end there. The judge asked him whether this meant, whether this meant, for example, that President Nixon could have shut down the Watergate hearings because he deemed it to be an inappropriate use of congressional power. Their attorneys, or Trump's attorneys, answer, yes, Nixon should have been able to shut down the Watergate
hearings. I mean, if he hadn't been drunk and crazy.
He hadn't been drunk and crazy. So Trump's official position is that Congress has no business looking into whether or not the president has broken the law. Think about that. Let that sink in for just a second. That is a breathtaking argument, and one that essentially dissolves any remaining ability for our system to check the chief executive.
Well, it's denial of the checks and balances in the Constitution.
Right. The administration's also making a blanket argument against Congress's right to subpoena witnesses and documents. William Barr went before Congress and refused to answer direct questions from a U.S. Senator, Kamala Harris in particular.
Mm-hmm.
He also refused point blank to show up in front of a House committee. So what recourse then does the legislative branch, I'm looking at the Democratic Congress, what recourse do they have then? They can't arrest the attorney general, can they, and force him to testify?
No, because he got all the cops.
He got all the cops. That's just what I'm saying. What do you do? What do you do if you're the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee and the attorney general won't come talk to you? What do you do about that?
There's a similarity, not a great one, between the dominance of the FBI by J. Edgar Hoover and the distortions that took place during the era of Hoover and the current situation. Now, this guy, Barr, is not as establishment. He's not as permanent. And he probably is not as powerful as Hoover, who gathered information on everybody. But
a different kind of power.
Exactly. It's a different kind of situation.
So we have right now, as I've tried repeatedly to make the point this morning, a president who is on the cusp of ensuring that he can in no way be held accountable for his actions. Congress still has some cards to play here, but they need to figure out an effective media PR strategy to make it abundantly clear to everybody that the president is so far in violation of constitutional norms and in contempt of our institutions that he must comply. I mean, somehow they've got to generate enough critical mass among the public that there is no other course of action.
Well,
but we may be faced with a president who, for example, refuses. No, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to come testify to you. I'm not going to give you any documents. I'm not going to let anybody who works for me come testify for you either. What are you going to do? Come get me. What are you going to do? That would be perfectly in character with this guy, his behavior his entire life.
Yeah.
Tell me I'm wrong.
He's what we call a very litigious man.
Yeah.
No, I agree, except that I can't help. This is my I think there must be among the Republicans in the Senate people of good mind and good character. There must be some. And I think those people are really trying to bury their head in the sand at this point, but it's going to become less and less possible as more and more evidence of the crime family comes forward.
I think anybody with any amount of human integrity who once worked for Trump has since left. I mean, look at how many cabinet ministers have come and gone.
Yeah, he goes through them a lot.
And the ones who stay with him are the ones who have sacrificed it all, who have no integrity left at all, no character left at all. Anybody who gets close to this guy is tainted by him.
Well, it is definitely a crisis of morality of an enormous sort. And we are at a point, and I agree with you on this, where if we don't, as a people, recognize it's not a question of left or right or up or down or policy or not policy. If we don't recognize that it's a criminal conspiracy, crime being run by criminals, people being having been convicted. I mean, we got a child pornographer in a position of direct advising to the President of the United States.
Yeah, and we have domestic policy being essentially formulated by a white nationalist.
Yeah.
Let's go to the phones.
I think so. Maybe that'll make us feel better.
Harry, good morning.
You're next.
Greetings, gentlemen, and thank you for taking my call. Of course, you've heard of the McCarthy era of politics, correct?
Indeed.
Yeah, this is the Mitch McConnell era of politics.
I think that's accurate.
And he's still...
Oh, by the way, I'm going to interrupt you for a second. His wife, it turns out, Mitch's wife, is a crook, too.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I couldn't help.
Oh, okay. And it's a Mitch of politics. And because of what he did to Obama and the Democratic voters expect this impeachment to go through because of the politics. We expect the Democratic Party to dish it out also. And if they don't impeach him in the House, there's a good possibility they could lose the House. People will stay home because you didn't do I'm glad you mentioned about Pelosi. She's the one saying no, and she might be gone in 2020 also.
Well, my hope is that her strategy is to see the impeachment demand build up to such an extent that she finally says, oh, all right, I guess we have to do it.
Well, it has to be done before the election.
Well, right? Yeah, it does have to be done before the election.
Yeah, before the election. So, and one of the reasons why in 2018 the Democrats took the House was people don't realize that over 2 million Puerto Ricans left Puerto Rico because of the storms.
Right.
And they moved to New York, they moved to Florida, and they had a major thing of changing the politics of winning the House.
Well, so you're hopeful. Can I summarize? You're hopeful that actually impeachment will take place and actually we will come to our senses as a nation?
Yes, yes. It has to come through so we can see all these charges. And also, there's when Trump gets out of office, if he leaves 2020, he has a lot of the Southern District of New York has a lot of charges against him. They've been doing investigations for years.
Glad you brought
and
that
so
up.
So there's a possibility he will go to jail if they're allowed to do they're still gathering information, So by then, hopefully, when he gets out in 2020, he can be put in jail.
Well, I agree with you, except that is exactly the reason why he'll resort to dictatorship, because this is a dude who would not like to be bare-ass naked in jail.
Yeah, but also noticing Trump's activity and his actions, like for China and Mexico and stuff, isn't this a shakedown? He's a mafia don.
Yeah, you got it. That's right.
It's a shakedown.
Well, I don't know about the mafia. I think we're giving Italian criminal conspiracies too much honor here.
Yeah, that's true. But that's what he did in New York City with all these buildings. They had he built the buildings and they had to pay him, you know.
I'm not questioning what you're saying. I'm just saying, I'm just being a little bit sensitive around the issue of pasting the traditional mafia label on what is a criminal conspiracy involving all kinds of ethnic communities.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But, I mean, you could say instead of mafia, organized crime.
Yeah, I like that one better.
Oh, you like that better? Okay, organized crime.
Yeah, well, it's an insult to the mafia. These guys are so dumb and so incompetent. And also, they have much, much worse taste in cuisine.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Let's go to Francis.
Hi.
Hey, what's on your mind, Francis?
You sound very calm, Francis.
I am. We need to not give our power up. And, you know, we talk about the arguments that the administration's attorneys are making in court. They are making those arguments, but they're not winning those arguments. And we have some very, very, very wise women in our Congress right now. I'm reading the book by Barbara Lee. It's a biography. It's called Renegade for Peace and Justice. And it's pretty awesome. Some awesome minds there. And I'd like to bring your attention to the speech that Senator Warren made on the Senate floor last week, where she called for impeachment, and she she read overnight the entire Mueller report. And when he came out with his statement, that was her, that was it. And she lays it out clearly. This is not a political choice. It is beyond politics right now. It is a constitutional duty for the Congress to hold impeachment inquiry.
I think you're right.
And once that happens and the hearings begin and people hear and see on public television what these people are doing and have done, it will make a entirely, there will be an entirely different scene going on here. And I know that there, and the obstruction of justice will be so evident. It's happening right now. Congress is having, the House is voting on the 11th on whether or not to hold Attorney General Barr in contempt. And if they are following their oaths to uphold our Constitution, they will vote to hold him in contempt.
And then
what will happen after that is, we'll see. It's kind of a big test of our checks and balances.
I think you're correct.
And I can handle it.
I think you're being rational, which may be a mistake in this weird world we're in. But I do appreciate your comment. But I just got a news flash. A judge, federal judge, has upheld the right of the, is this really true? Has upheld the right of the President of the United States to use military to use military funds to build his wall.
Really?
It's just, wow. I mean, this is really happening.
That's got to be challenged again. Now, we have some interesting people on Supreme Court, though, so that's going to be another test right there.
Yeah, I think that's the staffing of the courts, the packing of the courts with conservatives, I think is another way that Trump is managing to immunize himself from consequences.
But you know, there's conservatives, and then there's conservatives. You know what I'm saying?
But this situation is exactly why this was written the way it was, why the checks and balances are in place, and we'll see if they work. You know, I think the Congress, once anybody who aligns himself with Mitch McConnell are the people that need to worry right about now, because they've allowed this charade to continue for far too long.
Well, it's weird when you have a turtle as the head of the Senate. It's all kind of a bestiality thing.
Call him a turtle or whatever you want to call him, but he's very sinister, and he's the one that needs to be called out.
Okay. I agree.
Francis, I want to thank you for the call. I want to give some other folks an opportunity. We want an opportunity.
So during that last call, our engineer Ray posed the question to us, would Fox News broadcast the impeachment hearings? I think the answer to that is yes. I think they would, so they could spend hours on the air analyzing how mean those questions from Senator Harris were, and how uppity she is as a woman and person of color to be putting the Attorney General or the President or whomever it is under that sort of spotlight. I think there's going to be an awful lot of spinning from that particular news organization, and I use that term in the loosest possible way if impeachment proceedings were to go forward.
So we sent our able engineer in to check, and it is true that a federal judge has supported the Trump border wall funding through the Department of Defense. It's real. This is happening.
Yeah, it's... Today.
To
my admittedly limited understanding of the law, I thought that that was patently illegal, that the president is not in charge of this huge bucket of money from which he can take a little from column A, a little from column B, and then spend it on whatever he wanted. The Congress has to appropriate a set amount of funds to be spent on very specific things, correct?
Yes. Maybe not. I don't know.
The answer is yes.
but.
But, yeah. See, a lot of this, I mentioned earlier how we're dwelling under the shadow of past misuses of constitutional and executive authority. The very broad power granted to President Bush under the authorization for the use of military force that preceded the war in Iraq.
Which still exists.
Which still exists, and which this president is considering invoking to go to places like Iran and Venezuela. I mean, these are the kind of past mistakes. These are the abrogations of constitutional powers and checks that we are living to regret. And this is why you need each branch of a tripartite government to hold their others in check. I mean, this goes back to junior high school civics, right?
I never took junior high school civics.
Well, I know. Apparently, your education was really, really not very good. Because you keep mentioning how it was so bad. All right.
Yeah, sure.
I want to think there's a number of ways that this could play out. Now, if I were Speaker of the House of Representatives, if it were me.
If I were a rich man, beetle, beetle, bum?
Yes, something like that, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Here's what I would do. I would immediately launch very public, very aggressive investigations into all manner of conduct on behalf of the president and the people who work for him, particularly around
like the
2000... No, around the 2016 campaign. Okay. And I would do this in a very public way. I would have hearings on TV every day, and I would start this relentless drumbeat, this march toward what eventually would become impeachment. And when we reach that point where it's overwhelmingly clear to everybody, then you can turn this, regular congressional hearings into impeachment inquiries, essentially with the stroke of a pen or with a single press conference. You could say, oh, now we're in the midst of an impeachment inquiry, right? And if you time this correctly, you could do this throughout the coming electoral season, because let's face it, Nancy Pelosi is a politician and she's running scared now from what she believes are the political implications of impeachment. So you could have this going all through the next campaign season, such that eventually you're saying, hey, vote for the liberal, because you're voting now on the side of the Constitution, on the side of the rule of law, on the side of the preservation of our republic. You could make the politics work for you.
The crucial problem is that there is a huge, not the majority, but somewhere between 30 and 40% of American voters are caught in a bind of ignorance and anger and hurtfulness and racism and so on. And while they're being hurt by this administration, they are also making assumptions that are incredibly stupid, and they keep doing it, and it is not clear that they can be persuaded not to do it.
No, yeah, there's an irredeemable 25 to 30% of the electorate that is never going to abandon its tribe, no matter what. I remember when Trump said, I could walk out in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot someone, and my supporters wouldn't care. Those are the people he's talking about. And you know what? He's right.
Oh, I don't know about the shooting thing.
No, that they won't abandon him for anything.
Okay.
They won't.
That makes me really cheerful. Let's go to the phones. 231-8187. Eric, you're next.
Hello.
Hi. You're on the air.
Well, I think Pelosi doesn't want to impeach because Trump can start a war.
Huh. Now, that's a new wrinkle. She's afraid that if he gets cornered, he'll then create a war?
To wag the dog, as it were?
Do you remember Neil Bush?
Oh, yeah.
I turned on the TV to see the crucifixion of Neil Bush, and all of a sudden, all the warships are pulling out of Norfolk. Do you remember 9/11? The war is a bailout card for Trump. He's not going to go peacefully.
Yeah, I think possibly that he might go that route, but I don't think that the Iraq War was waged for similar reasons. I think the Iraq War was waged for the acquisition of natural resources and for the acquisition of geopolitical power. That's
how many aircraft carrier groups are sitting off the coast of Iran now?
At least one that I know of.
I think it's just
I saw two aircraft carriers.
What?
Okay.
Okay, anyway, you have the war. He has the war card. He's not going to go peacefully, and that's how they get that's his bailout plan.
So you're saying we're all blackmailed and therefore we should give up?
Sure. I mean, how many false wars, have we got in our history? A lot.
Yeah, it's true.
So anyway, just to think about what Pelosi's probably a forward thinker. And, if you guys want to get into another expensive,
Well, I think you're being kind to her. I think she is a strategist, and I think she's looking at the whole situation and fearing that they'll come up against a Senate that is dug in hard with support out of that 20 to 30, maybe even 40% of voters who still love the Trump.
Okay.
It's a strategy question, I think, unfortunately.
But yeah, I think you're right. We should not discount the peril of another war here before the end of Trump's first term.
That's my key fear.
Yeah. Listen, thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
All right.
Here's my take on Nancy Pelosi. There are certain things
you have a take.
Oh, I got all kinds of takes. Some of them are dumb. Some of them are not.
Well, take it away.
All right. She is very good at some things and not so good at some other things. She's very good at keeping what can often be a pretty disparate and diverse and unruly caucus in line.
You mean the cats?
Right. Yeah, she's good at the herding of the cats. She's good at whipping votes. She's good at procedural parliamentary stuff.
Yeah.
Right? What she's not so good at, I think, is opening the doors, creating possibilities for bold, visionary legislation. And I also think she is overly prone, and I think this is a generational thing within the Democratic Party. She is overly prone to fall into the defensive crouch, which is the Democrats' default position since Reagan was elected.
Well, I don't disagree with you.
You don't disagree with me.
I think that is a real problem.
Right.
I also think that it's possible that her technique here is to wait till there's such a heavy support for impeachment that she finally goes, oh, okay.
All right. Yeah, I think maybe... Yeah, I think you're correct about that. But it can't. I think that her timing is wrong. I think she should be pushing forward more aggressively now. I think she should be vocally supporting the investigations that are ready to start. She should be out every day hammering on the administration, asking questions. Why are you not releasing the documents that we have subpoenaed? Why are you not producing the witnesses that we have subpoenaed? Why are you not cooperating with the legitimate prerogatives of the legislative branch under our constitutional system?
Well, I think she should definitely be saying more of that.
Right.
So we both agree on that.
Right. The other possibility in all of this that really troubles me is touches on something our last caller said. He said that Trump will not go peacefully. Now, cast your mind back to the latter stages of the 2016 presidential campaign. Trump was asked that if the vote goes against him, would he accept the result? Do you remember this?
I do.
And he would not answer. He would not say unequivocally, yes, I will accept the result, or no, I will not accept the result. He left open the possibility that he would somehow call upon his supporters to rise up and contest the result of the election. Now, let me put it to you this way. If the jaws of impeachment are closing in around him at the end of his first term, if public opinion has shifted even more heavily against him, if he is facing the looming threat of criminal consequences once he is not reelected, will he accept the outcome of the next presidential election if it doesn't go his way?
Well, I think that's a good question. I'd kind of like to find out.
Well, I would very much like to find out. But here's what really worries me about that. His followers have a lot more guns than you or I do, Joe.
Well, you haven't seen my AK collection.
No, I haven't, because it doesn't exist.
Oh, that's true.
This worries me. I think this is a legitimate worry, that this guy will not accept the legitimate outcome of a presidential election if it does not go his way. Let's go back to the phones.
Let's go to Ben. You're on the air.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Go.
You need to, people, I just started it, but I've been listening to him for a few years. Is Malcolm Nance has a book out called The Plot to Destroy Democracy.
Uh-huh.
He was a naval intelligence for 35 years. The guy sees really clearly, and it's all about Putin and how Donald is basically the puppet. In fact, Malcolm Nance used the term the first Russian president of the United States when he was elected. I heard just last night that I called in a few weeks ago. I called and quoted Steve Bannon. I heard a quote last night. He said, about Mueller, he said, don't send a Marine to do a hitman's job. This week McConnell about placing a judge in an election year with that smirk when he said, you know, we'd fill it. These people are ruthless, and you have to play ruthlessly with ruthless people. Barr,
I agree.
Barr should be in jail. Mnuchin should be in jail. McGahn should be in jail, and then until further notice. And that would raise some eyebrows. That would get some attention.
Well, it also would be illegal. But go ahead.
But put them in anyway and say, okay.
See, therein lies the trap. If you give up the principles of democracy to save democracy, you have lost democracy. You have to go with the system. You have to obey the rule of law. And it's so tempting, and I understand this, to just make a martial law and get the bad guys out and keep the good guys in.
But
it never works.
He summed his nose at a subpoena. He defied the law.
Well, we're going to have to leave it at that because we've run out of time.
Yep.
I appreciate your call, and I don't know.
What a happy conversation.
Yeah, just joyful.
Thanks, everybody, for your comments, as usual, and we'll talk to you next week. Night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the
ashes of the gay. KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Road to the Green New Deal Town Hall on Sunday, June 16th at the Old Church Concert Hall in Portland. Sunrise Movement PDX hosts the Portland leg of the National Road to the Green New Deal Tour, featuring local activists like Antonio Zamora of For the People, community leaders, and key political players Representative Blumenauer and Senator Merkley. All will discuss the plan for tackling the climate crisis and creating jobs in the process. Again, that's the Road to the Green New Deal Town Hall on Sunday, June 16th at the Old Church Concert Hall, 1422 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 9:01. Coming up next, Alternative Radio features Chuck Collins, Director of the Program on Inequality and the Common Good at the Institute for Policy Studies. At 10 on Flashpoints, it's a rebroadcast of Dennis Bernstein's Memorial Day show. And at 11, it's Peace, Love, and Soup with Tave and Brian.
We need to create